Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to week three of Cover Your Six podcast. I'm your host, Ron Easton. Let me get the business in out of the way first. If you're looking to contact me, you can go through the email at coveryour6podcast@gmail.com. And you can go to my webpage at coveryour6, and you have to spell it out there, podcast.com. Leave a comment about anybody that you would like to see as a guest, or just your thoughts on the podcast. I'd like to know. I'm curious. This past week has been, as they say, it has been a bitch. Every day we lose more and more and more. And now this incontinent, inept abomination of an administration is going to send folks into Portland. Now this goes along with Washington, D.C., which they're still there, and now Memphis, Tennessee. They're slowly but surely putting their foot on the back of your necks and choking the life out of this country. Right before you, the Constitution is being rewritten. And I will tell you this, if there's anything that I would like to rewrite, it would be the Pledge of Allegiance. Why, you ask? I'll tell you why. I pledge allegiance to the flag. Why would I? Why won't I? When you take that garment, that cloth, and you put it on your body, in your crotch, around your breast, you put it at wherever you want it to be. You hang it out in front of your house as though it's a red badge of courage, and that makes you a patriot, and all you're doing is shrouding yourself in Christian nationalism and patriotism. That's why. Of the United States of America. Really? Seriously? United? I think not. We're far from being united at this point. And to the republic for which it stands. Whose republic? Define republic. Show me a republic. Place me where I can put my hand on it and see it's a viable thing. Because right now, I don't. And let's get to that part with liberty under God, indivisible. That's a joke. Under God. Here we go back with that Christian nationalism thing again. That white is right. Let's just block out all the people from color and history. Let's talk about a piece of artwork that was taken down. The Scourged Man was taken down. Why? Because the president found it offensive. He didn't want to concentrate on Black history. The fact that this man had to walk 80 miles to Union lines to find his freedom. All the scars that make him look like an alligator, they're all from slavery. But you find that offensive. Imagine how this man found it. So you remove that. Take that out. That indivisible part. That's stupid. With liberty and justice and all. I'll tell you who I'd like to see justice for. I'd like to see justice for Trey Reed, the young man they found hanging in Mississippi on a college campus and the young man that was hung beside him. I'd like to see justice for the kids at Annunciation School who were murdered while they were praying. I'd like to see justice for people who have been pushed. By the way, I'd like to see justice for that woman that was pushed on her ass by ICE. Now, if that was your mother, your sister, your wife, you would have your ass all on your shoulders, but I hear nothing out of you. I hear crickets. When has this nation become so weak that it allows someone to brutalize a woman right before your very eyes? You don't say a damn thing. Not a thing. When has this nation become so submissive that we allow one man who is a figurehead for white nationalism to ruin your life? That's the question I'd like to see. I'd like to see justice for that. Today's subject is something that's very, very near and dear to my heart. We're going to be talking about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. I've got two veterans, one from the Vietnam veteran era, or actually Vietnam, and the other veteran is from the Afghan-Iraq era. I also have the wife of a Vietnam veteran, actually two-time Vietnam veteran. And we're going to talk about the effects of PTSD on the family. And how, if you're not strong enough, you can lose everything because of what you have had to do. So we're going to talk about that as soon as we come back. Stand by. Ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned earlier, this week's topic is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It is something that I'm very familiar with. As a youngster, I was in college at Central State University, and two of my friends were KIA in Vietnam. So I dropped out and I enlisted in the military. I was fortunate because I had an Uncle Harold who had gone into the military before me. And this is him, and I just classify him one hell of a man. And he told me, if you do anything, make sure that you take it seriously, especially if there is the possibility of you going to Vietnam. There was indeed that possibility. I went through basic training at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and that's me with my ears sticking out like I'm catching wind. So going to Vietnam was my first flight out of the country. Here I came from Memphis, Tennessee, a southern country, and had no idea what I was facing. But I was not alone. I had people like my next guest here. I got Rick Fair. Now, Rick is from another time. He's out of the Afghan and Iraq portion. And then I've got Skip Nelson, who is absolutely a Vietnam veteran himself. Skip, I'm going to start with you, my brother.
Okay.
What unit were you in, and what was the rank when you ETS'd out?
I was with the 1st Logistics Command, which was the largest unit in Vietnam. It basically made the war function. We did all, you know, all the administrative work, all the support work. We did reassignments, you know, graves registry, the whole ball of wax.
Okay. Okay. And when you landed in Vietnam, did you have any idea of what you were going to be facing?
Not really, but it's kind of weird. There's another story behind that, but I had a certain understanding of the situation of the Asian people, which was kind of cool. I don't know where I picked it up. I think my aunt had a bunch of Chinese knickknacks on her house or something. I don't know. But I've always been fascinated with Asia. So from that standpoint, I kind of felt somewhat comfortable, you know.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Now, Rick, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Skip. Go ahead.
Being what, you know, we call RAMF, which is rear service, not near the front. But as we all know, there was no front line in Vietnam.
It was everywhere.
It was everywhere. Yeah.
Everywhere. Rick, you are also Army. How many years did you spend in the Army?
I spent 9 years to the day, 27 months overseas.
And you and I had a previous interaction about 8 months ago because I remembered you clearly when you got back in touch with me. Can you kind of explain what was going on with you at the time?
Yeah, I served with the 1st Squadron, 151st Cav Regiment, as part of the 39th Infantry Brigade Combat Team. And it didn't take me too long to figure out that getting shot at didn't sit real well with me. Now, I got back and thought that I was at least hiding that well, but I wasn't. And I was just in a downward spiral for a long time. Ended up costing me a job that I'd worked all my life for, and just a lot of mental anguish for more than a decade. But I finally got some help here in Missouri. I can't speak more highly of the folks who have helped me. And I just marked last month 2 years of sobriety after going through a dark, dark period with alcohol use. So, yeah.
Congratulations. It was during,
absolutely. It was during that dark period when you and I made contact, and I remember you specifically because I told you, do not give up, do not give in, and just, you did it. I'm overly proud of you.
Well, I got to tell you that it was because of your support and some support that I got from other brothers and sisters I served with that carried me through some very dark days. I have to also say, my blackmouth cur, Molly, helped me through one particular night that I might not have made it through without her.
Roger that.
But the one thing that, like I say, means everything in the world is the support that you can get from people who have gone through exactly what you've gone through. It's maybe the easiest thing to explain, but impossible to understand what war is if you weren't there.
Exactly. I'm going to switch over to Elizabeth. Now, Elizabeth, I introduced by saying that you have been married to two Vietnam veterans. Your previous husband, who passed away, was a Marine in Vietnam. What made you go back and decide to marry another veteran?
Let's see. Well, that's a long answer to a question that I won't go into, but I think the courage and admiration I had for anybody that went to Vietnam or any war for that matter. I've had family members in wars, but nothing like the little I've heard about Vietnam. So I wasn't scared of it, of marrying another vet.
Can you talk about some of the things that symptoms or things that your husband does that kind of are different?
Hypervigilance. I walk out of the house and the door's locked behind me, things like that. I'm sure it's not on purpose, I hope. Quick temper sometimes when things are scary. That covers a whole range of things. I think of 4th of July, for instance, when everything is loud and I am trying to figure out what to do. You know, do we go somewhere? I know you're, my husband is in the basement in the fetal position, essentially. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Skip, let me ask you this. I know when I came home, I was so busy trying to hide who I had been that I really didn't know who I was. What about you?
Well, I don't know what your personal experience was, so I can't speak to that. People are under the impression that, well, two things. One is that the people in the rear echelons don't fight. And we don't fight because we're not infantry. But the problem is that there is no infantry around there. So we pull all the guard duty. We pull the mountain guard. We get helicoptered in on a Chinook to spend like a week on the ridge, which incidentally, when I was up there, I came about this close to getting my head blown off by a sniper who was down the hill. And so everybody, especially in Vietnam, was at risk. Didn't matter where you were. So if you were in combat, they had a certain kind of PTSD. Everybody else, depending on your experience, had a different kind of PTSD, but it was nonetheless PTSD. And one of the things that I've discovered is over the years is that the other thing people don't realize is getting PTSD is not a weakness. Getting PTSD happens to people who know that what they're witnessing or what they're experiencing is wrong. You know, they came up in a family or they have the moral turpitude to understand compassion and empathy for other people. And those are the people that get PTSD, because all you got to do is look around us today. And we know that, and we served with guys like this who war didn't bother them at all because they loved it. They loved picking on people and beating people up. And, you know, they love that. They didn't get PTSD. I mean, they would like to go out and as we're, especially as we're looking around today at this, some of these people on a certain group of people, that's what they do. So it's really the sensitive, the
caring
people who have empathy.
Yeah, you're right.
Are the ones who come back and go, wow, this is not right.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Rick, let me ask you something. What finally took and what symptoms do you still deal with? Because for me, I still have the nightmares. I do not take the same way home. I don't leave my house without a firearm. My circles are closed. I never sit with my back to a door. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
And the same is true for me for a whole lot of that. I was listening to Lisa talk about locked doors. That's the one thing that I am kind of 180 degrees on. I don't lock doors. In fact, my back door is open as we speak now. And I don't know that that is, I'm almost inviting somebody to break into my house, but I just don't. I have no qualm about anybody thinking that they're going to come in here. That's crazy. I don't know why. But back to your question about symptoms and how do you try to work past those, two things is I thought a trigger was what you pulled to make my M4 go off. But triggers are what can really set PTSD episode off. And I really struggled with flashbacks. And I, for the longest time, I didn't recognize what triggers might set those off. Working with my mental health guy, we discovered what more than a few of them are. And so I can either recognize that trigger is possible, or I can avoid a situation where there might be that trigger. You can't always avoid it.
No, you can't.
You know, one of the worst flashback episodes I had was walked into my house one afternoon, went to close the door behind me, and it sounded just like the door closed into my hooch in Iraq. And just right that instant, I was back there, you know. But being able to recognize what triggers are and deal with that has been a huge help for me.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, if you were going to give the bride of a veteran a piece of advice, what would it be?
Patience. Be patient. There's so much I don't understand about my husband's reactions to things. And for a while, they were irritating until I learned that this is a reaction to something. A door shutting, much like Rick said, you know, a door shuts and it might trigger something. I try to be more conscious of that, but I honestly never know when something's going to happen or what might be triggered. And so it's being patient. It's your husband's or your spouse, and not always men. Your spouse's journey is a dumb word, but I can't think of a different one to use right now. It's something that they're dealing with, your spouse is dealing with it, or your significant other is dealing with it. I feel helpless, but what I know I can do is be patient and let my husband know I'm there.
That's good advice. You know, even with the cost that all of us are paying, and I say that because wives of veterans, especially veterans who have been deployed, you are of service as well. But then I think about the individuals who make it home. Okay, they're home. They're not whole, but they're home. They're safe. But yet and still, let me look, because I got to read this. In 2017, the number was 6,692. 2018, 6,722. 2019, 6,488. 2020, 6,326. 2022, 6,407. These are veterans who have committed suicide, okay? Because something that they did or saw was so horrible that they couldn't deal with it anymore. So there's a continuing cost to be paid. So I look at people like Rick and Skip and myself, we're survivors, long-term survivors. And I used to have a guilt about that. What about you guys?
I don't know if I've thought about that a lot. I don't know if it's there or not, but one of the things that I've learned how to do, the two of the best pieces of advice that I've had that really helped me to move forward is one, I was told by like my third or fourth counselor that you have every right to be angry, but you don't have the right to take it out on other people.
Very true.
That one lifted a big load off my shoulders.
Very true.
And I just think that the other thing is, actually, in Vietnam, I became a Buddhist. I've been studying Buddhism for 50 years. One of the precepts of Buddhism, one of the teachings of Buddhism is to let go of your anger. Let go of your ego. For whatever reason you're feeling, it's legitimate. There's no doubt about it. But I was told, put it in a box, put it up on a shelf, and every now and then, take it down and look at it. And then you put it back in the box and you put it back up on a shelf again.
There you go.
And you have to do that. But you know what? I no longer take it off the shelf because—
It's permanent.
Yeah. It's just there. It's there. It's every time I walk by, it's there. But it doesn't affect my life anymore. No.
Rick, let me ask you this. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I had a saying that Yusuf, I know PTSD has been a constant companion, but I no longer let him drive.
I like that.
I like that a lot. Oh.
Yeah.
I'll keep that if you don't mind.
No, keep it. It's a gift to you, my brother.
Roger that. Rick, what does your life look like going forward?
Busy, 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 as a matter of fact. I've been most of my adult life in the news media business. And after 2012, I was out of that for a few years. But I got back in it in January of 2018 because a fella who I worked for 20 years before that was needing some help. And anyway, I came up here and I've gone to work for him. And I thought I was just going to be here for a couple of years and I'd go back home to Arkansas. But every time I get ready to leave, he talks me into staying here. And anyway, he has been so supportive of my situation, knowing, you know, kind of where I'm coming from and what I have been through over the years. But the fact that I am able to be a productive employee for him and be focused and cognizant of everything that I need to be on top of there, I'm not sure if you'd have told me that 10 years ago, I would have thought that that was possible.
Yeah.
Because
I knew it was. I knew it was. I told you it was.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I had a much more difficult time seeing it. But that's one of the things that, one of the major lessons that I've learned is that because a situation right this minute might seem hopeless and you might seem helpless to do anything about it, that doesn't mean that it's going to be that way tomorrow. And golly, I mean, things can really change for the better if you'll just put your mind to it and do the things that you need to do along the way, including taking care of your mental health, taking care of your physical health. If you'll do the things you're supposed to do, you can get better and make progress.
Amen.
And I think another thing too is that we have to quit stigmatizing this PTSD thing. People think, oh, I don't want, you know, they get embarrassed. Oh, you know, I'm going to counseling. I'm going to see a psychiatrist. I need to take medication, blah, blah. The fact that you did things and you saw things in war that terrified you shouldn't be stigmatized.
I agree.
It's honorable.
It's kind of like...
it's hard to live with.
It's kind of like the scars of racism. They are there. Yeah. You are aware of them. They never go away. And they remind you of things. Let me get this out here because we're coming to the end. But I want you folks to know that, number one, these gentlemen and this beautiful woman here, we're family in more ways than one, because a lot of you already know that Elizabeth is actually Lisa. This is my bride. And we have been together for 17 years, and life has been a bitch sometimes living with me. And I know that. So publicly, I want to thank her. And I know life has not been easy, but you hung out. You hung in.
Still here.
Amen.
And you know, In my situation, I'm married to a Vietnamese woman who lived in Hanoi, who grew up during the war. So we have a different set of dynamics.
Yes, you do. Absolutely, you do. And you know what? You and I have been friends on Facebook for a long time, and you and your bride absolutely make aging look good.
Man, I'm having more fun now than I've ever had. You know, I didn't know it could be this good until I met her. I mean,
amen.
Yeah.
We're going to get final words. We're gonna start with Lisa. What you heard earlier was Bandit, my service dog, going off. Lisa, any final words you might want to pass along? Whatever.
In dark moments, I want to say to you and any vet suffering or living, I should say, with PTSD, that the respect and honor and I will never understand what you went through. I just won't. Not in my lifetime, I will not. But the appreciation and, again, the respect I have it's insurmountable. I have no words for it.
Well, I love you. Always have, always will. Rick, any final words from you, my brother?
I will leave the listeners with an offer that we talk about quite a bit in AA. I'm not great with lists, but it's one of the things that we talk about a lot, and that is service to others. So I would encourage anyone out there who needs help to understand that there are a lot of people out there, myself included, who will do anything in the world to help a brother or a sister.
And amen.
Just reach out to somebody. And if that happens to be me, I'm on Facebook. I'll be more than happy to listen. I'm a good listener. So just seek help if you need it. There are a lot of people there who are more than willing to help.
Roger that. Much respect. Skip, you got the last word, brother.
Well, one of the things that I've learned is, well, two things. One is to pause. PTSD, when you hit these triggers, you tend to react really quickly. And a lot of times you don't know what you're doing. I mean, so my thing is take a pause, 5 seconds, don't do anything, and then look at it again. Don't react, because one of the things that my wife does that's amazing, I love her for it, she can explain in detail without emotion, without any kind of games being played, just exactly what's wrong with me. We don't fight. We don't fight. My wife and I do not fight. We disagree.
Yeah.
But I let the anger go. I let the anger go because the anger is just another problem you got to deal with. So I skip the anger. We fix the problem and we move on. And I think take the pause.
One of the words that I had to learn quick, fast, and in a hurry when I married this woman was compromise.
Yeah.
Because it was essential to stay married. So I learned it. I'm happy about it. And to the three of you, thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining me on this. I appreciate you. And we will always be family.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for sharing it. Lisa, thank you very much.
Thank you all for letting me share too. Thank you.
And
very
Ron,
much.
My brother, good luck. You do it.
Roger.
You know, we're all going.
As always. Ain't that the truth? Holy shit. Yes, we are.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, for each podcast, I have initiated what I like to call a ring of honor. These are people who have made the ultimate sacrifice and been KIA in combat. This week, we're going to honor the first woman that was KIA in Vietnam, Sarah Lane.
Sharon Ann Lane, a hero of the Vietnam War, Sharon Ann Lane was the only American nurse killed as a direct result of enemy fire in the Vietnam War. Lane was born July 7, 1943, in Zanesville, Ohio. She graduated from Altman Hospital School of Nursing in Canton in 1965, where she worked until May 1967, later attending Canton Business College. On the morning of June 8, 1969, the 312th Evacuation Hospital was struck by a salvo of 122-millimeter rockets fired by the Viet Cong. One rocket struck between wards 4A and 4B, killing two people and wounding another 27. Among the dead was Lane, who died instantly of fragmentation wounds to the chest.